Herb Weisbaum is the consumer man. He writes for checkbook.org. Hey, Herb, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on. We appreciate it. If we're traveling and we keep hearing stories about whether should we be traveling yet or not with the vaccination rates and all these things, but we're thinking, boy, you know, it's a good time to get on airplanes and we're dying to get out, but you might get somewhere and then say, oh, we'll just rent a car for the week. This will be easy, and get quite the shock, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. Rental car prices right now are sky high at many vacation destinations across the country. And that is if you can get a rental car at all. In general, they're double to 10 times more than they were pre-pandemic, depending on what location you're going. The big areas in problem right now are Orlando, Tampa, Florida, Phoenix, Las Vegas, Puerto Rico, and I spoke to the CEO of a website called AutoSlash. They help you find the best rental car prices, and he said during spring break, 18 of the 20 commercial airports in Florida were completely sold out. You couldn't get a vehicle. Glacier Park Airport in Montana, virtually sold out as people want to do RVing and go to the national parks for July and August. You basically can't get a car. And just as a headline that I got from of our friends in Hawaii, the Hawaii News Now, they found that on March 29th, so that was the peak of a spring break, the cheapest rate for a rental car on Maui was, you ready for this? $722 a day for a Toyota Camry. And in Honolulu, vans were going for $500 a day, and convertibles $1,000 or more per day.
$722 for a Camry, but you're going to get great mileage.
Yeah, well, let me tell you. So I'm going to ask you a quiz question here.
Okay.
For my story, I interviewed a company from a couple from Seattle, and they had a trip to Hawaii planned in April. They were going to go for round trip from Seattle airfare and rent a car for 3 weeks. One of the prices was $600. One of the prices was $17. Which is the rental car? Which is the airfare?
Well, I cheated because I read your article to research this. But that's what I don't understand, because I read the rest of your article. That's at the beginning. He says it was $1,700 for 3 weeks. So he said, forget it. And then I read the rest of the article. And I'm like, dude, that's a deal. That's a deal at $1,700 if it's for 3 weeks.
Yeah, but not compared to last pre-pandemic
of
when
course.
We would go. And last year he went actually during the pandemic, April, and it was $1,000 for that 3 weeks. And the year before that, it was, you know, you're paying $33 a day. So it's really shocking for people. And again, you know, most people do what I do. You book the airfare, you try to figure out the hotel, and then you think about as an afterthought the rental car. Maybe I'll book it, maybe I won't. Now, they're suggesting you book the rental car first because A, you may not be able to get one, and B, you may not want to take the trip. Seriously, when I go to Hawaii in December, I'm seriously for the first time thinking of not renting a car. It was going to be $1,100 for 2 weeks. I'm on the beach. I basically, the car sits there to go to dinner. The bus takes me to where I want to go from the condo. It's a beautiful air-conditioned bus. That could pay for all my meals for the 2 weeks in Hawaii instead of the rental car that's going to sit there on the lot. I'll take an Uber to the condo and an Uber back. I've never thought about doing that before, but this year I'm seriously thinking of doing it.
I would think if you're just going to restaurants and not really doing a ton of traveling in the rental car, why not just Uber back and forth whenever you need to go somewhere?
Yeah, or for free, the van takes me to the place where all the restaurants are and the bars and everything, and to the Lahaina town on Maui. I don't really need a car, so I'm making some serious decisions about that. But what I did, and one of the tips for people is, I was able to rent a car. You can do it through many sites. I use Costco's car site, but also this AutoSlash. You can actually book a car these days and not have to give them a credit card or commit to the rental. So that way you have flexibility, you can change. The AutoSlash, by the way, gives you price alerts. It'll let you know if the price goes down, that sort of thing, and it can help you rebook. But I would not, if you're not sure, I wouldn't commit to a car and have the penalty unless you knew you could cancel at least 48-hour window. But there's no need to do that anymore. Just try to get a car where you don't have to make a commitment, and that gives you the biggest latitude in your travel plans. That was one of the tips that all the travel experts gave me for this checkbook story.
Okay, that gives you latitude in your travel plans, but it also makes me nervous because with how tight the cars are, if I'm not committed to a car and I didn't put down a credit card and it's one of these other sites, what happens if I get there and they go, yeah, we're sorry, we're out of cars?
Well, you have a reservation. You just don't have to pay for in advance. So a lot of times you'll get like a lower rate. They'll say, oh, but if you want to pay now, you'll save, $100 on the weekly rental. I would not take that bait and give them my money up front right now at this point in time. And it's basically because of COVID, and we just don't know what's going to happen with the traveling. So I would try to do an open-ended, or if you have to give a credit card, you can cancel at least 48 hours ahead of time with no penalty, and deal with that way. But I would not do this special internet price unless you know you're traveling in a couple of days or a week and everything's good. I wouldn't lock in and give them my credit card number at this point in time unless you absolutely know you can cancel. But yes, there will be situations, and it's already been reported in some of the press that people have shown up for vehicles and they've said, sorry, the inventory is just too tight and we can't give you a vehicle. We know you have a reservation. I'm sorry. Well, what do you do in that situation? There's nothing you can do. There's not a car. You can yell and scream and go after them afterwards.
Yeah.
But that is a situation that could happen. And it's all because of supply and demand. They sold off hundreds of thousands of vehicles when their business dropped 90% when the pandemic hit. And, you know, Hertz went into bankruptcy, so they got rid of all these vehicles. They're trying to replenish the fleet, but now we got this microchip shortage, and there's also a foam shortage where they use to make seats. So some of the vehicles aren't being made, and then the shipping delays from overseas, they're having a hard time getting the vehicles. They're also being careful. They don't want to overextend themselves again, so they're not really gone crazy replenishing the fleets. And you got the situation where it's supply and the demand has just come back. I talked to the head of Costco Travel, and he said nobody expected the travel to return this quickly. He said within the last 6 weeks, it has skyrocketed, and it caught everybody just dumbfounded, and that's where we are right now.
Yeah, it makes sense. When I first was reading your story, I'm thinking, oh, they're sticking it to us now because they need to make their money back. But it's really that they had to try to save their business, sell off all these cars. Now, of course, they don't want to buy a bunch of new ones yet. They want to make sure, and they'd rather face these shortages now than go, you know, have cash flow issues, I'm sure. We're speaking with Herb Weissbaum. He is the consumer man, writes for checkbook.org. Coming up next is very interesting because it's something you never think about until you need it. And then what rights do you have to try to get a better price? We'll find out next. 720 WGN. Herb Weissbaum is with us, the consumer man from checkbook.org. Herb, you wrote an article about, maybe you were quoted in the article, I'm not sure which here, that I have in front of me, about funeral homes. And yes, should they be required to post prices? And I had to go through this with my brother a year or two ago. You never think about this until suddenly somebody in your family dies. And then a day later, you're at the funeral home and you're a mess and you're thinking things. And you're not thinking about trying to get a better price or do things like that until you suddenly get hit with a price. So what's gone into what they're thinking about, how we should be able to be better prepared to have choices when it comes to that time?
Yeah, I mean, this is the consumer purchase that no one wants to make, but some of us need to make. I had to take care of it when my father passed away, but back then there wasn't such a thing as an internet. And, you know, you can price shop almost anything on the internet right now, but you can't do that with funeral services in many cases because the funeral home industry is not required to post its prices online. And that's what some consumer advocates are pushing for. The Federal Trade Commission, as it regularly does, takes a look at its various rules. And one of the rules it's looking at is the funeral rule to see if it needs to be updated. The funeral rule basically says that if you call the funeral home, they have to give you some prices over the phone. If you show up in person, they have to give you the detailed price list. They can't make you use their coffin. You can bring your own coffin or urn if it's a cremation situation. You only have to buy what you want to buy. But the feds are asking the question, and the comment period is closed, so they're now analyzing it. Should we require, would it make any sense to require funeral homes to post their entire price list online so you would be able to comparison shop if there's more than one funeral home in your city and you wouldn't have to come in and be face-to-face with somebody who may be very nice and may be very consoling, but obviously is in business and trying to make the most money they possibly can. The funeral industry is way opposed to this. They just don't even want to go down this path. They say it was kind of interesting what they said is if there are competitive markets where it's important to post the prices, we'll post the prices, and where it isn't competitive, we're not going to post the prices, and people can come in and talk to the funeral director and work out things. Consumer advocates don't think that's the right answer. Doesn't think the way it should be. But, you know, a lot of other industries aren't required to post their prices. There's only rules as to what you do once you post your prices, not that you're required to post your prices. So it's a very interesting question. And what people don't realize is how much the funeral services really do. The funeral varies from place to place. Now, Checkbook is in the Chicagoland area. I happen to grab a price from the Puget Sound area because that's where I live, just as an example. But they did undercover shopping. We did undercover shopping and found massive differences for the same services in the same region. So here in my area, the Seattle area, we found the price of direct cremation ranged from $589 to $4,000, with the average being $1,900. And a sample traditional funeral, the price ranged from $4,800 to $15,000, at $10,400 spread. I'm not sure that people are aware of how much the difference is between one funeral home and the other. Whole point of this article is that, you know, a lot of people aren't made of money. A lot of people don't want to spend that amount of money. You can, shopping around, competitive pricing can help you get something within your means and what you or maybe your loved one wanted you to spend.
Yeah, it's a very tough situation. When the industry said that they would post prices where there's competition, so does that mean if there's two funeral homes in one town?
Or, you know, more, if the, he, the spokesperson for the industry simply said where there's a competitive situation, that's to their benefit to post the prices, they will post the prices. And if it's not, they won't. And under no circumstances do we think the federal government has any right to require us to post the prices online.
So
that's the industry take on this thing.
Why did they say they do it where there's competition, but they won't where there's not? Did they give a reason?
Well, I mean, it sounded like, you know, why do it if we're not, if it doesn't help us, was basically the implication that he gave. We're only going to do it if it benefits our business in a competitive market where people might want to price shop. Why go to the time and do it if we're not in a competitive marketplace? Let the people just come in and see us. Consumer advocates would say maybe you could have a little bit more transparency and give this information to people without having to, you know, come all the way in.
I mean, it makes sense that it's such a time of grieving and of emotion and all of these other things that I could see where there might be some consumer advocates who would push and say this isn't a normal situation. People need better access to make these decisions than having to, you know, because you could argue that it's a bit of a monopoly. If you go to one place, how likely are you to say, you know, we got to get this done in the next few days, but we don't like this price. We're going to get up and go across town and find another place. We have to go in person to find out. That is difficult.
Well, or on the other hand, you are so emotionally distraught and in the funeral home, and that's what happened in my situation. When my father died, my brother and I were in Hawaii. We flew 24 straight hours to get home back to Philadelphia. The first person that we had to deal with a funeral, everything else had been taken care of by the older folks in the family. And we're at the funeral home, and the guy talked us into, and we were so out of it and didn't know what to do, a $6,000 cherrywood casket, because that's what your father would want, and that's what your mother wants to see in the sanctuary. And when all got, and we didn't even think about it, and when all got said and done, this was a Jewish funeral home, and months later I was talking to my mother, said, it should have been a pine box and a shroud. That's what the tradition is. I was like, you know, flabbergasted me, but everybody else in my family who's been buried has been a pine box and a shroud. Very cheap and very reasonable, but we got talked in to a $6,000 beautiful cherry wood coffin that was about to go on the ground. And afterwards, I realized, you know, you can't really make a rational decision there when somebody is consoling you, but at the same time trying to make money off of you. It's a very conflicted relationship, no matter how good they are with a funeral director. And sometimes if you stand back a little bit and can make the decision in the privacy of your own home, you know, you can shop funerals caskets online. You can buy them at Costco. You know, you can buy caskets on Costco and see the different ones. It's not like you have to be in a funeral home anymore to get a casket. I mean, there's a lot of things people can do without having to be there, you know, in that situation, which is a stressful and pressure-filled situation, no matter how you look at it. The one thing I want to make sure I point out before we run out of time, if it's okay with you, is a really big deal that's up on the website, and that is that FEMA got $2 billion from Congress, $2 billion with a B, to help people pay for funeral costs that they paid for burying somebody who died from COVID or COVID-related symptoms. That's an amazing thing that's happening right here. Any funeral expenses incurred after January 20th of last year, so January 20, 2020, could be eligible for reimbursement up to $9,000. That's funeral, that's burial, that's cremation, that's casket, that's urn, funeral home expenses, burial plot, marker, headstone, clergy services, up to $9,000. You can't apply online. I think they did that to stop fraud. You have to call a special number and then call a special number, talk to them, and they'll send you the form. It takes about 20 minutes to fill out the form. But if you had one of these funeral expenses, the death was related to COVID, and you've got the receipts that show you paid for them, you could get up to $9,000 back. All the numbers and everything are with this story either on checkbook.org or if you go to my website, consumerman.com, everything from Checkbook, that's all that's on my website. So you'll be able to find it there. But boy, take advantage of this if you can, because that's a lot of money that could help a lot of people.
And how stringent are they? Because a lot of people that passed away could have been from COVID sort of related. There is some variable in there. How stringent are they being on the proof of that?
They will. They simply said that you'll have to have the death as, quote, may have been caused by or was likely the result of COVID-19. I think they're really trying to get this money out to people. That was the intent of Congress. I don't think it's going to be an IRS audit situation. I think there's going to be a lot of just show us the receipts and we'll get you the money you need kind of thing. I think it's going to be fairly easy to do once you get through the process. The lines have been jammed. The first day it opened up on Monday, nobody could get through the first couple of days. The phone system crashed. There's no rush. There's no deadline. But certainly if you qualify for this, and there's, you know, obviously over 500 and something thousand people, families in this country that do, take advantage of it because the government wants to help out and they want to help pay some of your bills.
We have just a minute left, but you also had a story about the IRS not taxing on unemployment benefits from the past year.
Yeah, that was a big breakthrough because typically unemployment benefits are considered income and they're taxable. But because of the COVID, they're going to let you the first $10,000-something of that is not going to be taxed this year. Big break for people. So that's going to be very helpful to help get more money into people's pockets. Again, all the specific details about that are on either checkbook.org or consumerman.com. And we have a lot of people in the Chicagoland area, Matt, who sign up for my weekly newsletter. If you go to consumerman.com, it's right there, your name, your email address. I will send you all my stories every week. No selling, sharing, renting of my mailing list. It's me and my dog are the only two people who know who's on that mailing list. And we'll even do your show's going to go out as a podcast. We send out the WGN broadcast as well. So I hope you'll sign up for that. We love hearing, get a lot of questions from people in the WGN listening audience every time I'm on the air.
You're sure you can trust the dog with those emails, though?
Yeah, he's a pretty good boy.
I'm sure he is. Herb Weisbaum, the Consumer Man, consumerman.com. Check out the stories at checkbook.org. Herb, it was great to meet you. Thanks for being on with us tonight.